All right, folks. Always nice to have a last-minute connectivity issue to your demo, right? I'm okay now. It's all good. My name is Jose Barreto. I'm a principal program manager with the file server and clustering team. And in this presentation, we're going to try to actually walk through everything that we did in 2012, in Windows Server 2012, in regards to this scenario. But we want to sprinkle the new things in Windows Server 2012 R2 along with it. And my demos are going to be all on the new release. And the idea here is we are going to give you the basics of the scenario. Then we're going to go ahead and talk about some of the performance bottlenecks. I'm going to spend some time on performance, which is something that is near and dear to me. And then we will show you a few configurations. We'll probably spend like half of the content on the first one, and then we'll try to cover some of the other ones as well. And along the presentation, we'll also give you some troubleshooting tips, some hints, some pointers, so that you can deploy this. So that's the basic flow. So what are we doing here? So I hope you're here because you're doing virtualization or you're really close to doing it. Maybe you already deployed on Windows Server 2012 and you're looking to understand what are the changes in 2012 R2. And your scenario here should be all about private clouds or large-scale Hyper-V deployments where you need shared storage. You're concerned for high availability, right? And that was the focus on this new wave. So we understand that a lot of you did not deploy 2012 yet or are in the process of deploying 2012. And we want to ensure you that what we're doing here is improve on what we released effectively less than a year ago on 2012 in a very consistent fashion. So the hardware investments you have, the planning, the configuration that you did for 2012 should all be very much in sync with what you see here. If not, let me know. But we want to take you further into the notion of you reduce your costs, either by leveraging things like what you saw in the keynote today, like tiering in storage, or live migration, leveraging these capabilities of the new network interfaces, but also making things easier to operate, which also means reduced operational costs, right? So more automation. That's also a theme of what you see here. What is our vision in terms of a infrastructure as a service, as a private cloud solution? Well, a few things will probably be something you hear multiple times during this conference. Separate compute from storage. On the compute side, you have Hyper-V. On the storage side, you have a scale-out file server with storage spaces and a shared JBOD in the back. And SMB is the protocol that connects the compute and the storage. Jose, is that the only way to do it? No. It's just the one that we're focusing the most, at least the one that I'm focusing the most as a PM for the file server and clustering team. Now, getting very specific to what we're doing here, right? How do we get here? In the old days, if you wanted to have a Hyper-V solution that provides a highly available VM infrastructure, you would have to use shared storage in two forms, iSCSI or Fibre Channel. That was it. We couldn't use storage on file servers before because we didn't have certain capabilities in the SMB1, SMB2 stack. So what we did in 2012 is we very purposely went there and we said, okay, what are the things that you get from block storage that you cannot get from file storage that prevents you from deploying this environment, that prevents the Hyper-V team from saying, this is great. So we went there and we listed those things and we purposely addressed most of these things right off the bat in 2012, and we are continuing to address and improve things in 2012 R2. We believe in 2012. This is the list that comes from 2012, right? This is a great option, a third option that is really a great option. We didn't want to settle for something, oh, we're a little, you know, worse, but that's okay. No, we want to stand proud and say file storage is a first-class solution. How did we get there? We got there by providing things like continuous availability. So you can lose a node in the file server just as you can lose a node, a storage controller in your storage array. We can do scale out. We can effectively have multiple nodes in a cluster, and these multiple nodes in the cluster are all capable of doing work. And in this R2 release, we did that one better, and I'll tell you about that. SMB Direct, which is the ability to leverage RDMA and do very fast, very efficient I/O that feels like local. Multi-channel, which in the block world is the equivalent of MPIO, having multiple paths between your compute and your storage, and being able not only to fail over between these paths, but effectively leverage both when they are both up. So if you have two 10 gigs, you get 20 gigs of throughput. Then encryption, backup solutions with VSS, PowerShell and VMM support. And in that area, specifically in VMM support, you will see a huge set of improvements in R2 because we deliver the basic scenario in VMM 2012, but we are doing even more in 2012, in VMM 2012 R2. And I'm going to show you a little bit of that. Let's talk a little bit about transparent failover. If someone already saw that before, bear with me. I'll try to quickly give you the introduction to these topics so we can move to the stuff that's new. But I didn't want to just talk about what's new here. I wanted to paint the full picture for someone that's coming fresh to this content. Okay? So first of all, transparent failover. What is it? You have a two-node file server cluster. Your client connects to one of them. And then you start doing I/O with that node. But for some reason, that node went away. Maybe it was a memory failure. Maybe you patched the node and it needs to reboot. Something happened to that node. What happens is, with transparent failover, that node goes away. The connections from the compute node to those are lost. But we have a way to reestablish the connections without any loss of context to a surviving node of the cluster, okay? And you can do that, and it will take at most a few seconds to reconnect. Important piece is not the fact that we reconnect, although that is key. The important fact is Hyper-V will never know what happened, okay? So Hyper-V continues to work. What a VM sees is a little pause in I/O, and then it continues. Never an error. So that is the promise of transparent failover, okay? Scale out. Scale out's an important feature because in the past, we had this notion that one node of the file server was handling the workload, the other one was waiting for something bad to happen, which is, I guess, fine because it delivers the solution that you fail over when it's needed. But we thought it would be great if we had both nodes active at the same time. Or maybe to distribute load, you'd have not only two, but three or four nodes. And then if each one of your nodes has two 10 gig NICs, that means they each can deliver 20 gigs of throughput. Together, two nodes deliver 40. Four nodes deliver 80 gigs of throughput, right? And we proved that we scale up to eight nodes. Of course, in order to scale, you have to have storage that works well, right? You can't just deliver 20 gigs of throughput if you're backed by a USB stick, right? That doesn't work. But if you have the right storage, and tiering is key to that, right? This gets better with tiering. Why? Because with tiering, with the automatic tracking of what's hot, what's cold, the hot data goes to the SSD layer, which has a better chance of delivering on that throughput, on those IOPS, right? So Scale-Out has a number of tricks, including the check disk with zero downtime, which I love, which is the ability that you can actually do a check disk with the system running. Because now check disk in 2012 takes just a few seconds, right? So what it does, it takes the CSV quickly takes it offline effectively, does the patching, and then brings it back online. But you never see anything because it's so fast. And if it's too much to do in one pass, it does the first one, then it goes back, lets everyone work, and then does it again. Right? So a number of these tricks. And one thing that is not even on this slide, which is caching. How many of you know of CSV caching? Okay. If you didn't learn anything from this talk and you're deploying this thing already, remember CSV caching. Go take a look. It is crazily important. It will give you much more performance for your read workloads. And it can be dramatic for workloads like VDI. Okay? Now, our first new feature in 2012 R2, automatic scale-out rebalancing. This is a great feature because in 2012, we delivered something to you and you said, okay, so the way it works is like this. If you have 100 clients and you're coming to my 4-node file server cluster, we'll do round robin and we'll spread this across the cluster. What happens is if you have 100 clients and 4 nodes in your file server cluster, in average, you get 25 for each one. Okay? That's what round robin does for you. However, over time, that could change. And we provided PowerShell scripts that you can go run and rebalance, and it's done live because we have transparent failover. We can move clients around and all that. But there was a scenario, which was especially true for mirrored spaces, where there is a node in the cluster that has better connectivity. So the node that's the coordination node in a scale-out cluster actually performs I/O better. The other ones can have to do redirection. So what we're doing now, we're doing a few things. One, a node in the cluster is not the only thing that you will find. You will find now a per-share connection when you come into the cluster. Let's make it simple. Imagine that scenario. Have share 1 and share 2. That single Hyper-V host is coming in and has some VMs on share 1, some VMs on share 2. In the old days, what we would do is say, pick a node, file server 1, file server 2. I choose file server 1. Then all my I/O goes to file server 1. In R2, what we did, if we have this notion that one node does better I/O to a certain volume than the other one, we'll start doing per share selection of nodes. So in that configuration, let's say share 1 is in a space that's coordinated by file server 1, and share 2 is in a space that's coordinated by file server 2, a single client will effectively connect to multiple nodes of the scale-out server. That's a first. We didn't do that before. Not only that, we will automatically find what is the node that has the best path, and we coordinate with CSV on that. And we'll automatically connect so that we avoid redirection traffic between the clusters nodes. Okay? So that is new. And the idea is this happens automatically. Okay? And this will avoid redirection traffic. And it will make your scale-out server more efficient. I have a demo on that. It might make it a little bit more clear. Another thing we're doing, multi-channel. Great feedback from this feature. This is effectively our way to do MPIO. Okay? So if you have 2 1-gig NICs, you get 2 gigs of throughput. If you lose one NIC, the surviving NIC will take the whole workload. And that event is not an event that Hyper-V will see as an error. It's just something got rebalanced. Don't worry about it. We'll have some stuff on a queue. We'll move to another queue. Nothing happened, right? So that's what we do. In a demo that I love to do, I did it a lot, is trying to have one NIC, then plug the cable to the second NIC, and then it discovered there's another one and then starts doing both, And then I plug another one and start doing three. And then I pull the plug on one and it goes back to doing two, all automatic with a workload running, right? So that's like MPIO. I would argue this is a little bit more interesting than MPIO. Because if I have fast NICs, slow NICs, RDMA NICs, non-RDMA NICs, there's a whole lot of different things that we do here. And the greatest thing about this is automatically configured. I know people freak out a little bit and say, yes, it will discover the best path and we use it. Are you sure? Yes, we are sure. Especially with clusters where you specify which NICs you want to use for client traffic. It's actually not that hard because we got a hint from you to say which nodes actually are the nodes, which NICs are the NICs that you want to use for that kind of traffic. But it just discovers it, okay? Multi-channel. SMB Direct. That's the one that gets people scratching their heads, right? Why? Because we use these NICs, and I have to tell the story of how this came about, right? So we were discussing this, and we say, okay, so can we be as good as iSCSI? Bah, no problem. We can do it. We're using TCP/IP. That's no problem at all. And then came the fiber channel conversation. Said, okay, so one of the other things, the fiber channel is out there, and fiber channel has great throughput. And fiber channel also has very low latency. How can we even touch that? That was 4 years ago. Okay? And we sat down and we looked around and we said, okay, but there's these guys that are doing high-performance computing over there. They use very low-latency networking. Why can't we use that stuff? He said, don't go there because it's a different model of programming. It's remote direct memory access. You have to register memory, and you have to keep it for a certain while, and then you do a special kind of transfer. That's not a sockets-like interface. It's too complicated. And then we have a few guys in our team that like stuff when it gets complicated and makes it not complicated, right? So that's what we did. We went after that technology that was used just for high-performance computing. We built in the capability in SMB through multi-channel to detect the presence of that kind of NIC, and we automatically detect and enable that kind of traffic. In short, if you have the right NICs, we give you amazing performance with tiny, tiny latency and CPU utilization. I'm going to show you some of that too. The notion here is you don't have to do anything for it. If you have the right NICs, SMB will figure it out and we'll switch. But we will effectively stop using TCP/IP completely and use this new way of doing data transfers. This stuff is so good that the Hyper-V team looked at it and said, how can we use that for live migration? And they said, you know what? We plumbed this all in SMB. So what they did, they are now doing live migration over SMB for the sole purpose of leveraging all this goodness, both the multi-channel goodness and the RDMA goodness. And I will show you that as well. Now, Jose, that performance was good. Come on. You were doing 16-point-something gigabytes a second, right? And we're still doing that, by the way. But we had a weak spot, small I/O. For large I/O, for 1 gig I/O, 512K I/O, we could do that all day long with very tiny CPU. However, if you were doing 8K IOs, we could, quote unquote, only do 300,000 IOs per second. Most people think that 300,000 IOs per second is a fine thing, right? But again, those same guys that accepted the challenge before came back and said, you know what? We can do better than that. If we just make a few things different, if we just do a few tweaks, and we get our partners to give us a little new capability in the driver, we can actually make that go faster. So instead of saying, register memory, go to the other side, make the transfer, then come back and then destroy the registration, we can actually avoid one step in the registration process and optimize it. Instead of confirming every I/O, we can actually do batches of confirmation and we'll make it even faster. especially for small I/O. So they did it. And we went from about 300,000 IOs per second at 8K to about 450,000. For something that was already crazy fast, that's not bad. This is so fast that if you're using just 10 gigabit NICs, you can't tell the difference, because we can already saturate 10 gig NICs, even at 8K in 2012. Problem happens only when you're using 40 gig or 56 gig NICs that we see that you can't really drive it that all that much. So we went after that little extra, and we're going there, okay? I'll show you some of that as well. Speaking of that, oh no, my computer went to sleep. And guess what? Came back. Okay, let's flip over here. Let's see if my connections are all there. Yes, they are. Good. All right, let's start over here. First, I want to start a little workload here. And I'm going to bring up this performance monitor. This is a first. So you saw me starting the workload hitting six different shares. These six different shares, they are in two different nodes of a cluster. And I'm hitting both nodes at the same time. You see there? There is a single client hitting the scale-out cluster. Before this, I was actually only going to one of them. I would pick one and use that one. Now, I'm hitting both, right? That alone is the per-share redirection I was talking about. And I can show you here that I have two nodes in this cluster, right? A1 and A2. And then, if you look at my disks, you see that I have a few here, A1, A2, A3. And they're spread across the different nodes. And you see, I have my witness, and then I have three disks in one node, three disks in another node, right? That is not an accident. And that was not something that I actually asked it to do. This is a new capability in CSV that says, when you do this stuff, automatically split the CSVs across the nodes. You don't have to do it, it just happens. Okay? That's fine. Now, what I want to do, I want to add a node to this cluster. Now, I could do it here in Failover Cluster Manager, but you know what? For the first time, the VMM team is working side by side with us. Right? So, in the last release, kind of we release, and then VMM comes like a little while after, right? So now we're working in sync. And I can show you that I can manage this file server from VMM right now. So if you look here, have you seen this before? There's some great stuff here, if you don't mind. So if you go here to the create, I have now the create file server cluster. This is awesome. You can actually, from VMM, go here and say, yeah, I want to create one. And it says, oh, do you already have the server, or do you want to bare metal provision the server? Right? So this kind of stuff is entirely new in 2012 R2 for VMM. And it also manages spaces behind, so we have a provider that does the spaces piece. But let me focus here on what I came here to do. So you see my six shares are there, and I got my nodes. If I go here and look at my cluster nodes, you see I have two. I'm going to go ahead and say, let's add a node here to this cluster. And what it's going to do, right, if you're familiar with VMM, you know you have to go to the jobs thing here. And it's essentially going to manage this whole thing for me. It's going to go ahead, say, okay, so I need to add a node to this cluster, so I'm going to deploy my agent. I'm going to make sure that I have the right roles installed, that the failover clustering feature is there, and then I'm going to add this node to the cluster. And now I can do this whole thing from VMM. How about that? Okay? So that is a new capability. All right. But that's going to take a little while. So what I'm going to do, in the best tradition of the cooking shows, is I'm going to bring another thing over here to entertain you while that happens. Okay? So we're going to do a little performance demo. And who doesn't like a little performance demo, right? So I have a few very nice machines back in the lab in California that one of our partners was nice enough to let us access from here. And we're going to do a little I/O demo. First, we're going to do 8K I/Os going to disk. So I have 16 different instances of SQL I/O hitting a file server that has a mirrored space, single mirrored space comprised of 48 SSDs, okay, with 6 SHBAs. Trivial stuff. And I want you to pay attention to this number. So I'm doing nearly 600. Come on, past the 600. Go, go. Go. Yes. It didn't do it. It was really close. Come on. So I'm going to go ahead and freeze it here so I can zoom in. Oh, I can't zoom on this one. Never mind. But we're doing a healthy. Oh, it did. It hit. Ah, 600. Yeah. All right. 600,000 IOs per second. This is coming from disk, random reads, and interesting thing, in 2012, I could only do that if I had an all SSD configuration, right? Now, with tiering, I might be able to hit that with a mix of SSDs and HDDs, right? If my hot data is in the right place, okay? That's a great number. That's a higher number than we could do before. But let's try something different. I'm going to stop this, and I'm going to use cached IOs. So I'm going to go client talking to server over the network, but instead of going to disk, I'm going to actually go just to memory. See what I mean? Jose, is that realistic? Yes, it is. If you're doing CSV caching, that's some of what you do. I mean, it might not be for the entire workload. I just want to show you the capability of the stack here. 992, 3, it's not going to hit 1,000. I'm actually entirely CPU bound at this point. I'm doing nearly 1 million remote IOs per second. Do you know what the number there is latency? It's this. We are doing 1 million IOs at 8K, and my latency is so small that Perfmon tells me it's zero. It's actually not zero. It's less than 1 millisecond. It's about 200 microseconds, I believe. I did? Yeah. Yay! I hit 1 million for a second there. Did you see it? Yeah. All right. That was the goal. It doesn't always, you know. I'm doing 16 different processes there, so they kind of have to hit just right. But you see, that's the kind of stuff that we couldn't do before because we weren't optimizing for those small IOs, right? And now, I mean, 1 million is like a mythical number, right? It doesn't mean anything. Most people tell me that their workloads need 100, 200,000 IOs per second. That's about it. In fact, someone told me once that if I could do more than 700,000 IOPS, I would be in the same league with the highest, you know, the biggest arrays out there. So 1 million is just a number. But what we're doing here, we're actually investing in this stack to make it extremely efficient. And I'll say it up front. Do we actually need to use RDMA for Hyper-V over SMB to work? No, you don't. You can do it with 1 gig NICs, that's fine. We can only hit the high numbers with these. And I have one more number to show, which is this one. The number is the throughput number. We used to hit this throughput number. This throughput number means I have three high-speed NICs. I have three 56 gig NICs, Mellanox Connect X3 NICs in this system, right? They, in theory, can hit a number that about that big, right? And that's about what we're hitting. So we're nearly line rate. I used to be to be capable of doing that with 512 KIO, later 128 KIO. We're doing it now with 32K IOs coming from disk. So this is not cache. This is a storage space mirrored with those SSDs traveling over the network to the other side and doing 16.5 gigabytes a second. For perspective, 16.5 gigabytes a second is 15 10 gig NICs, right? It's 20 8 gig fiber channel NICs, okay? Look at the latency. At 32K, 1 millisecond, okay? So that's what we're talking about. Let me stop this guy. And I'm not going to wait. I'm going to switch back. So that's the end result. We got our third node in the cluster. And what happened is automatically CSV rebalanced the cluster, right? Put two CSVs on each node. And the SMB client said, oh, the CSVs moved. I'd better move with it. So now, because I have six different shares, they spread across the cluster, and my single client is now hitting all three nodes. And bonus points here, I can go ahead and go back. And to kind of demonstrate my transparent failover, which in a sense I already did, but I can go ahead and say, I want to remove this from the cluster now. I'm that fickle, right? So what we're going to do is we're going to let VMM remove that node from the cluster. And what will happen is I have a client talking to three nodes. One of the nodes is going to be evicted from the cluster. I'm going to be remaining two nodes. We'll have two nodes remaining in the cluster. That is a non-event in terms of the workload. The workload moves around. The CSVs move. And the workload just stays there, okay? It's just a regular operation in your data center. That's the kind of power that transparent failover can give you, right? You don't care. As long as there's one node remaining, I'm fine. I'll keep going. There it goes. It just rebalanced. You see it? On the way out is a little faster because it's just as soon as you plug it, it has to rebalance. But that's it. Okay? Cool. Let's come back to slides. So that's what we saw. We went from a two-node cluster to a three-node cluster, and not only CSV rebalanced, but the SMB scale-out server rebalanced, and never forgetting that we can now do per-share scale-out, not per-client scale-out, right? That's entirely new. And then the performance, right? That's the configuration we're having there. Three high-speed RDMA NICs going to storage spaces, six SHBAs, and 48 SSDs, and we hit over 600,000. And I actually, before I had to set up another demo in this thing, so I put more load on this machine that you see in the next demo. So I was hitting actually 1.1 million IOPS from cache, and then 16.5 gigabytes a second, right? Now, this one is so interesting because people see that and they say, oh, wow, we can do live migration over SMB. There's always a big confusion between storage migration and live migration, which is not the same thing, you should know, right? Live migration moves potentially memory and storage. I'm focusing here on the live migration that does the memory move. So I have one VM running on this machine, another VM running on this machine, to move the memory between the two, we used to do a simple TCP/IP connection, and then we transfer the memory as fast as we can through TCP/IP. Then when it's done, we flip over, right? That's what live migration is all about. So the Hyper-V team was extremely interested in saying, how can we do that faster? And they came up with two new methods. One is compression. The other one is using SMB, which gives them multi-channel and RDMA, right? That was a great thing that happened. And that chart doesn't do it justice. Because you see, there's this huge bar over here, right? Then there's a small bar here. And then there's another even smaller bar here. First of all, you can't see the difference between the two. It does exist. But the second piece is this only talks about how long it takes to migrate. There are other variables. For instance, how much bandwidth can you use? How much CPU are you using? And that's why I wanted to do a little demo of this. Because with the right system, we can actually, remember those 16.5 gigabytes a second? How long does it take to transfer a VM with 10 gigabytes? Less than a second, right? How about a VM with 48 gigabytes? You have one of those? Those are not very common, right? I mean, it's got to be running something like SQL or something, right? How long for that one? Oh, come on, guys. Where's the math? No cell phones. Okay. So that's the idea. You set it up there. And you first of all, you can use our RDMA work. Second, you can do multiple NICs at the same time. So you can aggregate. So today, live migration in the traditional methods doesn't aggregate NICs, right? The other thing that we're delivering on is something called SMB bandwidth limits or bandwidth management. This is the idea that now we have a lot of folks enjoying the benefits of SMB, right? So we have traditional provisioning of VMs, we have live migration, we have Hyper-V of SMB, we have cluster communication that uses SMB. This is all different types of SMB traffic. We felt the need in this release to actually give you a way, first of all, to observe the three different types that we defined, right? So we now have the default, virtual machine, and live migration. So that's three different categories. And you can actually set a limit and say, okay, for live migration, I don't want to use more than 1 gigabyte a second, right? And this is optional. In fact, initially, we were very worried that if you had a lot of, because it's memory to memory, right? There's nothing holding you back, really. So it could saturate the pipe, and you could do it. Our recent experimentation shows that I mean, we tried really hard to starve the VMs, and it doesn't happen. There's some fair sharing already happening naturally. And typically, live migration over RDMA is so fast that it's a short event. So it doesn't matter as much. But if you're concerned, we have the ability to do bandwidth management. I can't hear, sorry. We did it. Question is, can we do it by percentage? No, it's a fixed number. It's set SMB bandwidth limit dash category blah dash bytes per second blah, right? Okay, let's flip over here, and I want to do the demo. I like this demo because it gives you a little insight on the migration. Let's try to do this. I'm using that same machine, and I'm going to drive here a different set of perf counters. All right, let's take a look at this. So I'm going to do a series of migrations using the different methods. First up is TCP/IP, right? So using TCP/IP, observe the perf counters. So the greens are the CPU on the sending and the receiving side. The blue is bandwidth. So these are very efficient machines. So you see that I have 2.5 gigabytes a second throughput over TCP/IP, which is absolutely not bad at all, right? However, it's still taking 26 seconds to transfer this 48 gig machine. I'm going to move it again so you can observe. So I move from computer 1 to computer 2, right? So CPU was slightly above 10% on both sides, right? And throughput was about 2.5 gigabytes a second. I move from point A to point B. I'm going to move back now. And I have the CPU counters over there so you can observe something. So now I'm moving. Do you see anything interesting about the CPUs? Look at this guy. What's happening here? That guy is pegged. That is actually holding back my migration times. That NIC can actually do 6 gigabytes a second. The reason it's doing only, right, 2.5 is because that single CPU is holding it back. And that's understandable. When you're doing a single TCP connection, you affinitize to a core, and that's all you can do if you have only one. That's fine. Let's try something different, right? So instead of using this traditional method, which, by the way, 26 seconds to migrate a 48 gig VM, not bad at all, right? Not saying anything. But that's a very capable machine. Let's now do compression. So what is compression about? Instead of just grabbing chunks of memory and sending over, we grab that chunk, we compress, and then we send. What we do is we save bandwidth dramatically. But what are we trading it for? CPU is high. Now, understand here that Hyper-V put a lot of work that if you have a lot of load in your CPU and you do compression on top, it's not going to steal CPU from the VMs. So if you have available CPU, it will use it. If you don't have available CPU, it will look more like the traditional migration, right? But, you know, the scenario is we have 100 VMs on a host. I migrate off 10 so that I can rebalance things, right, in my cluster. So there might be some CPU, and I'm moving it back so you can see it. So this is moving from, moving to, right? Now, how about you have your cake and you eat it too, right? How about low CPU utilization and fast performance? We're now at 20 seconds for that large migration. How low do you think you can go? All right, RDMA, start. So we're doing this over those three high-speed NICs. Look at the blue line. Look at it go. Actually, it went literally off the chart. We finished in how long? 13 seconds. Now, we were only transferring data for 3 or 4 seconds there. The rest of it was just Hyper-V thinking, OK, I'm migrating. Right. From where? From here. To where? To there. Do they have permission? They do. Do they have the memory? They do. Can I allocate the memory there? Let's allocate the memory. OK, we're ready? Yes. Let's transfer. Boop. Transfer. OK, did it work? Yes, it did. OK, bring back the VM. Are we good? Yes. OK, bring it up. Go. Right? That was it. Look at it come back. Yes. The notion here is we're basically transferring this chunk of data. Let me show you how much. Can you see this here? It's 1.87. It goes into scientific notation because the number is too big. It's 18.7 gigabytes a second. There's nothing holding us back, right? It's just memory talking to memory. In fact, I'll give you a data point that made me chuckle. The Hyper-V team actually tried with 4 NICs talking to 4 NICs. It didn't go any further up. Guess why? Well, it turns out that DDR3 memory has a limit. So the memory couldn't go that fast. So the network wasn't the bottleneck. It took them a while to figure it out. They were like talking to us, it doesn't go any faster than that. Get faster memory. It's interesting, but it's true. I mean, I have the charts to prove it. Just all right. How do you like that? So that's the summary, right? The shape of TCP/IP, the shape of compression, the shape of RDMA. RDMA actually uses less than any other method, less CPU, and it transferred the fastest. Now, there's a balance to be had there. If you have a lot of bandwidth available, you want to just use it, right, and get it over with. Now, the problem with that first case is that you can't use all the bandwidth because you're bound to a single TCP/IP. So with multi-channel, we already do multiple connections, right? So we've solved that problem in multi-channel. And with RDMA, we do two connections per NIC just in case, right? And since we had three NICs, we had plenty, right? So now you can actually leverage that same networking technology you were using for Hyper-V over SMB for storage and use it for migration as well. We also do encryption. I always ask folks, I mean, do you do encryption today? And everybody knows that IPsec is an option, right, for iSCSI. And there are actually some standards for fiber channel encryption as well. Yeah, they do exist. However, when I ask people, are you doing encryption on your fiber channel array? I'll ask again, anyone? One guy, yay! But that's usually the case, it's one or two, right? Why? All this stuff is very complicated. Encryption is hard, not with SMB. With SMB, you have one flag that you set, and then encryption happens. No PKI required, no certificates. We already have a secret that's never shared on the wire, and we use that secret to derive a session key. And if you know your encryption, you know that's all you need, really. And we do it in a very simple way. Not going to lie, if you enable encryption, we can't do RDMA as efficiently. Because the whole notion of RDMA is you move data without touching it. If you're encrypting, you have to spend CPU on the way in and on the way out. But it's an option, and we do it as efficiently as possible, and we use a set of encryption methods that are accelerated by AES. We use AES, the encryption, and we can accept, it's not really accelerated, but it's helped by instructions in the CPU, okay? AES NI CPUs. We also have a solution for backup called VSS for SMB file shares, which is essentially a way to have backups in the same VSS infrastructure that we did for block, but with file. So again, the notion that we want to have absolute parity, every capability exists in both block and file. A couple of things we did. First of all, we're doing multiple instances now. So I mentioned that SMB is also used between CSV cluster nodes for internode communication. We did some interesting work for resiliency, really, to separate the two traffics. So the clients coming into your service get their own default instance, but the internode communication between CSV nodes now has a separate set of queues and locks and everything, so they're independent. So one traffic doesn't interfere with the other, okay? Another thing we did was diagnosability. We heard loud and clear from folks that our events were not good enough. Case in point, access denied. You go to the log and you see access denied. Go figure it out. Right? That was the experience in 2012. That wasn't good enough. So what we did, we went back to every event and we looked at how we could make it better, how we could provide more information. In this case, we say, okay, there was an access denied, but here's the client that was accessing it, this information. Here is what was the user logged on. Here was the access that he had. Here's the security descriptor at the time. This kind of information that we usually have to go back and ask everyone to say, oh, can you do it again so we can catch it? And there's nothing worse than having a problem and then asking whoever has the problem to make the problem happen again, right? That's not a good story. So we're trying to make these events on by default so they're captured the first time and with as much information as we have available, okay? VMM and scale-out file server, I cannot say enough about this. So we are doing a lot of work together with the VMM team. I showed you some of it. So the fact that you could see the capabilities of my scale-out file server there, but that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's a whole lot of work that VMM has done, for instance, to do echo management, so permission management. So when you start using a host to access an SMB share, you need to grant the host access to the share, which is straightforward enough, but some people will still stumble. Nothing better than VMM, especially when you have, you know, lots of hosts. It's harder to keep track when you keep adding and removing hosts. So VMM takes that trouble out of your hands, handles it automatically. And we could actually spend, I say, a full hour just going through the UI to let you understand all the small places where VMM has made some adjustments. Like, for instance, classification that we didn't used to have that for server 2012 in VMM. In 2012 R2, they now have classification. You can have your gold file share, silver file share, and then you can allocate differently. Like you have one that's with tiering, ones that's without SSDs, then you can have one different purpose file shares, and you can do classification. There's a lot there. I would highly recommend that you see the talk by Hector that goes into great detail. Also, management of spaces with VMM is greatly improved, because if you're using spaces behind the file server, this is all integrated now. You can actually go from a storage pool down to a file share in a single wizard, right? You don't even have the space. You just have a pool. You say, I want to take this pool, I want to create a space, and I want to format, put everything, then create a share on it, and do this, and it has the whole thing. It's a workflow that covers the entire aspect. So it's great stuff. Now going back, we talk about features, but when you talk about deploying things, we want to make sure that you understand that there's a lot of different configurations. At the same time, I want to point you to a certain direction, okay? You can do a single node file server, which is option A on this slide. Problem with that is that you have only a single file server, it's not highly available. That guy goes down, it goes down. The storage is directly attached to it, so that storage is no longer accessible. For some folks, that's okay. I've talked to a few folks that said, you know what, if it goes down, it goes down. We'll go, you know, troubleshoot, bring it back. Could take a few hours. That's okay. Most people, though, want to have something that's highly available. There's actually a talk in this conference that says, I think the title is, all storage should be highly available, or something like that. Right? Yeah, that's you, right? So what we are recommending that you, at the very least, have two nodes. Why? Peace of mind, high availability. You can do maintenance on either node, and transparent failover will kick in, and you don't have to take downtime. The solution is typically using some form of shared SAS storage, JBODs, right? Why do we talk so much about JBODs? Because we're trying to bring that cost down. And the JBOD is the absolute smaller cost that you can have for shared storage, right? You can do other things. Let's, for instance, think of a multi-node file server with a fiber channel array in the back. Great solution as well. Especially if you already have the array, but you want to enjoy some of the benefits that we talked about today. And you can certainly see how that could save even on not only on operational costs, but on capital costs as well, because you only need to wire the fiber to the four file server nodes, not to the entire set of compute nodes, right? So it's less HBAs to deploy, smaller switch to deploy. Now, other things in terms of networking, I know people sometimes come to me, Jose, You always demo this stuff with these Mellanox Connect X3 cards. They are like 56 gigabits per second. I only have 1 gig NICs. You're fine. Just understand that a 1 gig NIC will give you 110 megabytes a second. That's it, right? If you're okay with that, and many people are, you're fine. I have a customer that's doing 6 1 gig NICs teamed. That's fine too, right? It's still the cheapest thing you can get is 1 gigabit networking. If you can find a way to live with it, just be my guest, right? Now, most people are already investigating high speed, at least 10 gig, not necessarily with RDMA, but with RDMA, especially with these new benefits, you might want to take a look. The cost for discrete 10 gig RDMA or not, it's almost the same. It's a matter of picking a vendor that actually has the capability, right? If you're paying attention, we had Intel, Chelsea, and Mellanox in the last release that had support. In this release, inbox will be Chelsea and Mellanox, and I hope some more will come on board, right? And now there's 40 gig from Chelsea coming up as well. Permissions. So I want to get this deck with all the details that you need. So just keep in mind, you need to create a folder, then you create the share, and then you apply the permissions to the share in the same commandlet, right? And we have a way to copy the permissions. We have some of a kludgy way to do it in 2012 with a get property that then pipe to set echo. We actually created a proper commandlet in this release. So there's set SMB path echo is a commandlet that essentially gets the echo from the share, puts it in the folder. That's it. Okay, so it simplifies things a bit. In the GUI, all you need to do is put a UNC path wherever you put a drive letter. So \\ file server name instead of drive letter colon \. That's as simple as it is. Of course, in PowerShell, it's just as simple. So new VHD, new VM, there's really nothing new there. There is one thing, have you heard about shared VHDX files? Ah, I have a session on that coming up, don't miss it. A new scenario that for guest clustering using shared VHDX files. You can almost imagine what that would be. Few important nodes. You have to use SMB version 3.0. Okay, you will find that in Windows Server 2012 and in 2012 R2. Also in a couple of third-party implementations that are coming up. EMC has one, NetApp has one as a release candidate. More might come, okay? Technically, this R2 release is still SMB 3.0. It's actually 3.02, if you must know. But it's 3.0. We'll call it 3.0 still. You do need Active Directory because of the way we handle permissions. You can manage with VMM 2012 SP1 or 2012 R2, but 2012 R2 is so much better, okay? Loopback configurations, remote management. We actually have a few new commandlets for delegation that I didn't include here. We'll talk about it. Yes? No, VMM takes care. The question is, do we need to set up constrained delegation if we're using VMM? No, VMM has its agent on every machine and has its own way to handle credentials through something we call Cred SSP, and it doesn't need constrained delegation. That's one of the great things about VMM. You don't need to, don't think about it. Just deploy it and it will work, okay? If it's not working, we need to take a look. But it, by design, Cred SSP does not need delegation. There must be something wrong in the configuration or something wrong with VMM. No, by design, it should not require delegation at all. And that's how we deploy it. I'm surprised you're here. Well, speaking of that, I have a whole list of tips and answers from the blog. So if you're not looking at the blog, there's a whole lot of things people ask all the time. Oh, in clustering, do I have to actually do multi-channel? Can I do multi-channel with RDMA? Can I combine with LBFO? Can I do this? Can I do that? I have a full list of this, these Q&As on my blog. There's not enough time. We could probably do a whole session just on that. But I wanted to put the list here, like the minimum firmware version required. The last one, how to rebalance before we automatically rebalanced, right? All that stuff is there. Another thing, KBs, watch out. That last one on the list, please, if you're deploying 2012, get that KB. Okay, it's a hot fix that addresses six specific issues that we found after release. Okay, so full list of KBs. Some are informational. Some are actually issues. There's an issue with VSS. There's an issue. The last one is probably the most interesting one of all because it's like a combined set of everything that we found that affects the CSV scenario. So please take a look at those if you're deploying 2012 right now. Okay? Now, we have a little bit of time to talk about performance. Okay. Performance is a hard topic. Why? Because there's so many variables involved, and even more in R2. But the performance conversation always comes, and I wanted to embrace it. But I need to tell you there will be lots of boxes, right? And there will be lots of color trying to differentiate the boxes. But the story is actually not that complicated, but there are tiers that you have to be aware of. There's JBODs, there are file server clusters, there are Hyper-V clusters, and then there are your clients. And then there's networking between them. Between the JBODs and the file server clusters, what is the network in this case? SAS. Okay? Between the file server cluster and the Hyper-V cluster, what is the network? RNIX, which is my short for RDMA NIX. Also very useful when RDMA NIX doesn't fit in the box, because it's a very small box. Between the Hyper-V cluster and the clients, typically we don't need RDMA, so regular NICs are at play. Okay? In this case, I'm using a storage spaces configuration, right? And you have the multiple different JBODs. And everything there could be a performance bottleneck, essentially. Have a very fast NIC with a very slow disk, not good. Very fast disk and a very slow SAS, not good. And there are different SAS speeds, by the way, and disk speeds. Here are the few things that you should be thinking about. How many SAS ports per module? What's the SAS speed? Is it 3 gig, 6 gig? Do you have the mythical 12 gig already? I see a few folks here that might have it, right? So disks per JBOD. What's the disk type? Is it an SSD or an HDD? Is it a capacity HDD or a performance HDD? Do you know the difference, right? What is the SAS speed on the disk? Because you could have a 6 gig SAS bus, but a slower disk or not. How many spaces? How many columns per space? Jose, I don't know what a column is. That's a bad sign. Go read on your spaces, right? What's the CSV cache configuration? Remember the one thing you should take from this one? Look at CSV caching. Tiering now. And the black stuff is actually the stuff that's changing in this release, right? So CSV caching used to be up to 20% of the memory. Now we flipped it around. You can use up to 80% of the memory for CSV caching. That's a hint, right? What's the SAS HBA that you're using? What is the speed of that? How many lanes? How many ports? Okay? Then on the RNICs, how many RNICs do you have? What's the speed? And so on. Sample configuration, everybody loves that. It's a bit outdated since we introduced tiering yesterday, right? So first of all, you have 500 VDI VMs with 2 gigs of RAM, each one virtual processor, 50 gigs of disk per VM, 30 IOPS per VM. Jose, where did you come up with those numbers? I made them up. No, actually, I observed some of the studies, and I put together a list. Jose, my VMs are typically 1 gig of RAM. Doesn't matter. It's just an example, okay? My VMs do 27.5 IOPS. Great, right? Just plug your number in, do the math. Then, what are you building this with? I'm using 900 gigs HDDs at 10K RPM, which give me about 140 IOPS. Jose, I never get 140 IOPS out of my 10K 900 gig. Put whatever number you're getting. Measure it yourself. Maybe there's caching in the disk I use. Who knows, right? Just measure it and do the math. I have 60 disks per JBOD or 24. Those are the common numbers that I've seen around, right? My Hyper-V host has 16 cores, 128 gigs of RAM. You know what's going to say next, right? My Hyper-V host has more RAM, less RAM. Just plug your numbers, right? Then we do the math. In terms of IOPS, we need 30 IOPS times 500 VMs divided by 140 IOPS per disk. So I need 107 disks based on IOPS. Based on capacity, 50 gigs per VM times 2 because it's mirrored, times 500, the number of VMs, divided by 900, which is the capacity of the hard drive. Jose, I never get 900 gigs out of my 900 gig hard drive. I know. Isn't that sad? Just plug in your number. Okay? I'm just saying, because people ask this stuff. So you need 56 disks based on capacity. So what do you go with, 107 or 56? Obviously, 120. You give yourself some room, and you have 260 disk JBODs, right? So it's not a bad thing. So round up to 120 disks, 2 JBODs, 60 disks each with some spare space. You already have spare space because you only needed 56. Now imagine what tiering does to that equation, right? That's the fun piece. Because you now have a twist on that. But let's not think about that right now. So I have the Hyper-V host, 2 gigabytes per VM and 128 gigs. How many VMs per host? Don't say 64. That's not the right answer. The OS needs some room, right? I say 50, just, you know, rounding up. And then I have 50 VMs with 1 virtual proc divided by 16 cores. It's 3-to-1 ratio. What is the limit? Actually, there is no limit. You kind of pick up your own ratio, right? We used to have a ratio that was recommended. You know, the ratio is start stuffing VMs on the host. When your customer starts calling, then back off. That's about the right equation, right? 3-to-1 is fine, though. Networking, 500 VMs, 30 IOPS, 64K IOs. I'm kind of going with the high number, just to be on the safe side. So 937 megabytes per second required. I'm going with a single 10 gig would give me more than that, but I always want to have at least 2 NICs, right, for fault tolerance. So we have plenty there. And same thing for the file server, 500 times 25, I need 12,500 IOPS. Do you think the file server can handle that? I hope that my demonstration might have, you know, cleared that up. Typically, a 2-socket Romley machine can do a little dance around a few 100,000 IOPS. No problem, right? If your storage subsystem can keep up, it's not going to be the CPU, okay? RAM, 64 gig for the file server. These days, if it's clustered, I'm saying 128 and some caching, maybe, right? Just to give you room. And a homework for you, redo this calculation with tiering. Right? That's a trick question. So that's what I got there. And you see how many SAS ports, and the yellow that shows over there a little bit on the how much you can do and all that. Speeds and feeds. Be aware when you're doing these calculations, right? A 1 gig NIC will give you 0.1 gigabytes a second. A 40 gig NIC will give you, in theory, 4.5. Typically, you don't hit those numbers. Those numbers are the theoretical maximum numbers, right? Somewhere in there, there's the DDR3 memory, 18.3 gigabytes a second. You see there? So that was the number we hit. There's also some other stuff, just so you can. So you get a very fast card, and you plug it on a PCIe Gen 2 by 4 slot, it will give you 1.7 gigabytes a second, never more. It doesn't matter how good the card is. If the bus is not operating, you're not going to do it. Those cards I was using were sitting on PCIe Gen 3 by 8. So they each give me 6.7. Do the math, times 3. That's about what we were getting. Okay? Sample configurations. I'm closing. I have just a few minutes left. And if you want to ask questions after, I'm fine. I can stay for a little longer. I want to show you three different complete setups from people that actually deployed this stuff. One is the guys from HOL Systems. I'm not sure anyone in the house from HOL Systems. They probably know enough about this stuff already. So what's happening there is that they have a whole lot of Hyper-V hosts, 50 in total. And they used to do a lot of stuff with Fibre Channel. And they have a lot of those arrays. They run the labs for these events, like a massive number of virtual machines and all that. They some statistics about what they did, this specific configuration that I was talking to them about. One of the interesting things here is that they created a few file server clusters and front-ended the Fibre Channel with that configuration, which I thought it was an interesting thing that they did. And they saw a lot of benefit. They're especially impressed with the CSV caching. Right? Keep in mind there that they were doing 10 gigabit Ethernet. They were not even using RDMA. Another one, it's kind of a fancy one. There's some guys on MSIT that says, okay, let me devise a great system, right? And they want to host, I think their goal was somewhere in their number of VMs. Oh, 1,000 VMs, the last line, right? So 1,000 VMs per stamp. They call this thing a stamp. They mean to have multiple of those. Go figure, right? And what they are doing there, they're devising, they put an EMC VMAX in the back, wired to 4 file servers, right? And then they do the whole dance with having enough Fibre Channel to go down, right? And then they go up with 10 gig, right? They were doing Broadcom, so no RDMA there, and doing a whole lot of details. And they have huge VMs as well. So these guys are deploying right now. It was a fun little deployment that they were doing. The other one is there's a case study on this one, which is NTTX. NTTX, actually, these are two distinct examples. But these guys, they went with the whole storage spaces, JBOD solution, with Hyper-V over SMB, scale out, and all that. And I can see that the contrast there on the NICs is not quite good. But those are switches, the ones you can't read what's in. Right? But anyway, they have a whole lot of different Dell servers on one end, and then multiple file servers down there. Question that I commonly get is, Jose, why not 4 nodes on the file server cluster or 6 nodes on the file server cluster? Why do they have all these different clusters for compute, some with blades, some without blades? That's called life. Right? Life happens to you when you're trying to make plans. Right? So they had some, they bought some more, then they bought some more, and they expanded, and then they had a cluster, and they built another one. There wasn't enough SAS ports in the back of the machine to wire 4 nodes to all the JBODs. They had 8 JBODs. That's quite a lot, right? So those are not theoretical examples. This is something that happened, and they did the best with the hardware they get. On, I'm not sure if you see, but the configuration on the left actually is entirely based on 1 gigabit networking. And they're fine with it. Now, the new one, they're doing it over 10 gig with a single switch. But that's the kind of stuff. I wanted to give you, and you will get these slides, right? They will be available. You'll be able to take a closer look. But what I wanted to kind of explain to you is that there is no single way of doing this stuff. But what we're striving to do here is giving you, in the scale-out file server, something that works well, that adapts to the different networking configurations that you have, that supports any kind of backend storage that you throw at it, as long as it's shared, right? And that, for the most part, tries to figure itself out so that you don't have to do any hard work to set it up. That's one of the principles we're doing. Combining this with VMM, right, to give you some great insight. So that's what I was trying to get you, and I think I just barely made it. And the idea here is to give you the scenario. I know you have questions. You can interact with me through the blog, which has a mail option that you can send mail to me if you want, or through Twitter, at Jose Barreto. We have a whole lot of other sessions. I highly recommend the first one over there, not because I'm talking, but because it relates to this scenario. It's the shared VHDX that I talk about. There's a few hands-on labs also on this stuff. And I also would recommend you take a look at my blog. Shorthand is smb3.info. That's the URL, right? Easy to remember. And let us know what you think. Try this out. We have a lot of interesting things going on, different configurations, different customers enjoying these benefits. Number one thing that I'll leave it you out with is this is not really about cost of acquisition only. I think one of the main things that we talk about here is the cost of operations. And people don't really, come on. Oh, I don't have my scan tag. You go find it. I thought I did. So just go take a look at the different things that will be optimized by multi-channel, by SMB Direct, by scale-out, especially now with automatic balancing, by VMM. Just think about it. There's a lot of thought that we put into it. Deploy the pilot. Deploy a test configuration. Let us know what you think. Okay? I'm out of time, but I'm glad to take questions in person over here. Thank you.